The hallway was deserted outside her quarters and offices. Bertrand was in the opposite wing with Teresa, having the stresses of his high office relieved. Dalton had made sure it was a time when Teresa was with Bertrand. The thought of it would help him focus on the work at hand. Bertrand and his wife made sure they rarely encountered one another. Having their quarters in opposite wings helped. She did sometimes visit him, though. Their screaming battles were legendary among the staff. Bertrand one day sported a cut over his eye. He was usually able to duck the objects she hurled at him, but on that occasion she had caught him off guard. Partly because of Hildemar's popularity, but mostly because of her dangerous connections, Bertrand dared not confront, cross, or do away with his wife. She had warned him he had better hope she didn't die a sudden death of natural causes, or any other causes, lest his own health suddenly fail too. It was a threat Bertrand did not take lightly. For the most part, he simply avoided her. There were times, though, when his penchant for risk caused him to make foolish comments or in some other way embarrass her, and then she went looking for him. It mattered not where he was, either, in his bed, his privy, or a meeting with wealthy backers. Bertrand generally avoided troubles with her by trying to take care, but there were times when he provoked her ire. It was a relationship that had worked on this estranged level for years and had borne them a daughter neither cared for. Dalton had only seen her recently when they brought her back from boarding school in order to stand with them at public addresses, decrying the horrors of an uncaring Lord Rawl and the Mother Confessor. Now the Lord Rawl had been rejected by the people. Now the Mother Confessor was, well, he wasn't sure what had become of her, but he was reasonably sure she was dead. It had cost Dalton some good men, but in war there were always losses. He would replace them if need be. Saren Rajek had died too, a terrible infection that turned his blind face to a festering mass. But Dalton couldn't say he was at all unhappy about that. His grieving followers reported it a lingering and painful death. No, Dalton was not at all unhappy about that. Hildemar opened the door herself. A good sign, he thought. She was wearing a dress more revealing than usual. Another good sign, he hoped, since she had known he was coming. Dalton, how kind of you to ask to pay me a visit. I've wondered how you've been getting along and thought a talk long overdue. So, how have you been since your wife has been serving the needs of our sovereign? He shrugged. I've come to my way of dealing with it. Hildemar smiled, a cat seeing a mouse. Ah, and so the lovely gifts. To thank you for... Might I come in? She opened the door wider. He stepped inside, looking around at the unrestrained opulence. He had never been in the private quarters of the sovereign and his wife. Of course, his own wife was quite familiar with them, and had described them, Bertrand's anyway, in great detail. You were saying about thanking me. Dalton clasped his hands behind his back. For opening my eyes, he gestured behind himself and smiled. And your door, I might add. She chuckled politely. I sometimes open my door to handsome men. I find it a sometimes rewarding experience. He closed the distance and took up her hand, kissing the back of it while looking her in the eye. He thought it a pathetically contrived act, but she responded as if she believed it sincere, and as if she were well pleased by the token of respect. Dalton had researched her private activities, had taken every favor owed him, as well as some direct threats, and even an appointment of standing. He now knew what she liked and what she didn't. He knew she didn't like aggressive lovers. She liked them on the young side, and attentive. She liked to be treated with the utmost reverence. She liked to be fawned over. He approached this visit like an elaborate feast, with each course in order, and building to the main attractions. In this way, with a plan, he found it easier to proceed. My lady, I fear to be so forward with a woman of your station, but I must be honest. She went to a table of inlaid silver and gold. From a silver tray, she picked the cut glass bottle and poured herself a glass of rum. She also poured one for him, without asking, and handed it to him with a smile. Please, Dalton, we have a long history. I would like nothing better than your honesty. After all, I was honest with you about your wife. Yes, he said. You were, weren't you? She took a sip and then laid a wrist over his shoulder. And are you still languishing about that? Or have you come to face the realities of life? I must admit, Hildemar, that I have been lonely, what with my wife so often occupied. I never expected to find myself with a wife so often unavailable. She clucked sympathetically. You poor dear. I know just how you feel. My husband is so often occupied himself. Dalton turned away as if embarrassed. Since my wife is no longer bound by our vows, I find I have desires she is unable to satisfy. I'm ashamed to admit it, but I'm not experienced in this sort of thing. Most men, I guess, would find this sort of endeavor comes naturally to them. I don't. She came close up behind him, putting her mouth next to his ear.
Do go on, Dalton. I'm listening. Don't be shy. We're old friends.
He turned to come face to face with her, giving her the chance to display her cleavage, something she believed was greatly appreciated. Since my wife no longer is bound by her vows, being called upon by the sovereign, I don't see why I should be bound by mine, especially when I have longings.
Well, of course not.
And you once told me that I should come to you first, if anything changed with the status of my vows. Well, if you're still interested, things have changed. Her answer was to kiss him. He found it less repulsive than he feared. By closing his eyes, he was able to actually enjoy it after a fashion. He was surprised, though, when she shifted immediately to the more advanced matters of the encounter. It would make little difference in the end result. If she wanted to go straight to it, that was fine by him. Chapter 69. It was as forbidding a place as Richard had heard, the highlands above the Narif Valley, a bleak wasteland. The wind howled in dirty gusts. You would expect Joseph Ander to pick such a place. The mountains surrounding the dead lake were just as dead. They were rocky, brown, and barren of life, their peaks all crowned with snow. The thousands of runnels coming down the slopes sparkled in the sunlight like fangs. Juxtaposed with the bleak wasteland was the green of the paca plants, which looked almost like water lilies in the vast waters stretching across the wide lap of the surrounding mountains. Richard had left the horses down lower and climbed the narrow foot trail he found that led up to the lake. He had tied the horses on loose tethers and removed their tack, so that if he failed to return, they could eventually escape. Only one thing drove him on, and that was his love for Kaylin. He had to banish the chimes so that he could heal her. It was his sole purpose in life. He stood now on the sterile soil beside the poison waters, knowing what he had to do. He had to outthink, outcreate Joseph Ander. There was no key to the riddle of the chimes. There was no answer. There was no solution waiting to be found. Joseph Ander left no seam in his tapestry of magic. His only chance was to do what Joseph Ander never would have expected. Richard had studied the man enough to understand the way he thought. He knew what Ander believed and what he expected people would try. Richard could do none of those things and expect to succeed. Richard would do that which Joseph Ander chided the wizards to do, but which they couldn't see. He only hoped he had the strength to see it through to the end. He had ridden hard in the day, switching horses so they would make it and yet be able to take him back. At night he had walked them until he could walk no more. He was exhausted, and hoped only that he could hold out long enough for Kaylin. From the gold-worked leather pouch on his belt, he pulled white sorcerer's sand. With the sand, Richard carefully began drawing a grace. Starting with the rays representing the gift, he drew it exactly opposite from the way Zed told him it must be drawn. He stood in the center, laying the lines of the gift inward toward himself. He drew the star representing the Creator next, and then the circle of life, and the square for the veil, and lastly, the outer circle for the beginning of the underworld. Imagination, Joseph Ander had said, was what made a great wizard, for only a wizard with imagination was able to transcend the limitations of tradition. A grace might rise in obedience to an inventive spell. Richard intended to raise more than that. From his place inside the grace, Richard lifted his fists to the sky. Richani, Centrosi, Vasi, I call you forth! He knew what they needed. Joseph Ander had told him. Richani Centrosi, Vasi, I call you forth and offer you my soul. The water rippled as the wind rose. The water moved with deliberate intent. The wind coming across the water ignited into roiling flame. They were coming. Richard, charged with need and with anger, lowered his arms, pointing his fists off toward the edge of the lake, where it flowed at last over the rocky lip and on down into the Narif Valley. His entire being focused there. Through his need and his anger, he called the subtractive side of his power, the side from the darkest things, the side from the underworld, from the shadows in the dark forever of the netherworld. black lightning exploded, the bolts from his fists twisting together in a rope of howling annihilation, focused by his need, powered by his wrath. The edge of the mountain lake erupted in violence. The rock beyond disintegrated in a shower of steam and rubble from the touch of the black lightning. In an instant, the lower lake shore at the edge was no more. The destructive force of the subtractive magic vaporized it out of existence. With a thundering roar, the lake began to empty. The water churned as it pulled itself over the side. The edge foamed and frothed. The paca plants swirled with the water, tearing from the lake bottom. The vast lake of poisonous water plummeted over the brink. The fire coming across the lake, the wind on the water, and the churning water itself slowed as they approached. These were the essence of the chimes, the distillation that spoke for them. "Come to me," Richard commanded. "I offer you my soul." As the chimes began to circle ever closer, Richard drew something else from the pouch at his belt. And then, out in the lake, as it emptied, leaving a muddy bottom where poisonous water receded, there came a shimmering to the air just above the falling water. Something began to coalesce, to take form in the world of life. Wavering in the air above the surface of the water, a figure began to appear, a robed figure, an old man made of smoke and glimmering light, a figure in pain. Richard threw his fists up again. "Richani, Sintrosi, Basi, come to me!" And they did. Around him swept the substance of death. It was almost more than Richard could take. Standing there in the center of the maelstrom of death, it was as abhorrent a feeling as he had ever felt. The chimes called to him with seductive sounds from another world. Richard let them. He smiled at their summons. He let them come, these thieves of souls. And then he lifted his arm to point. "Your master!" The chimes howled around him with rage. They recognized the one rising up before them. "There he is, slaves, your master."
"Who calls me?"
came a cry from across the water. "Richard Rawl, descendant of Ulrich. I am the one who has come to be your master, Joseph Ander."
"You have found me in my sanctuary. You are the first. I commend you."
"And I condemn you, Joseph Ander, to your place in the afterlife, where all must go when their time here is done." Chimes of laughter rang out over the lake.
"Finding me is one thing, disturbing me another. But to dictate to me is altogether different. You have not the power to begin to do such a thing. You cannot even envision what I can create."
"Ah, but I have," Richard called out over the falling water. "Water, hear me. Air, see what I show you. Fire, feel the truth of it." Around him, the three chimes turned and spun, wary of what he had to offer them. Again Richard thrust out his hand. "This is your master, the one who appropriated you to his bidding instead of yours. There is his soul, stripped bare for you." Concern darkened the face of Joseph Ander's form.
"What are you doing? What do you think you would accomplish with this?"
"Truth, Joseph Ander. I strip you of the lie of your existence." Richard lifted a hand, opening it toward Joseph Ander, opening the hand that held the balance. Black sorcerer's sand. Richard let a trickle of black lightning crackle between him and the spirit of Joseph Ander. "There he is, Richani. Hear him. There he is, Vasi. See him. There he is, Sintrosi. Feel him through my touch." Joseph Ander tried to throw back magic of his own, but he had consigned himself to another world, one of his own making. He could not bridge that void. But Richard had called him and could reach through. "Now, my chimes, this is your choice, my soul or his. The man who would not surrender his soul to the afterlife, the man who would not go to your master in the underworld, but became your master in this world, where he enslaved you for all this time. Or my soul, standing here, in the center of this grace, where I will pull you to me, and you will serve me in this world as you have served him. Choose, then, taking vengeance, or going back to slavery."
"He lies!"
Ander's spirit cried out. The storm of chimes around Richard made their choice. They saw the truth Richard had presented them. They crackled across the bridge Richard had created, the void in the world of life. The world shook with the ferocity of it. Across that bridge, with a howl of rage that could come only from the world of the dead, they seized Joseph Ander's soul and took him with them back to that world whence they had come. They took him home. In an instant that stretched for an eternity, the veil between those worlds was open. In that instant, death and life touched. In the sudden silence that followed, Richard held his hands out in front of himself. He seemed to be whole. He found that remarkable. The realization of what he had just done came over him. He had created magic. He had righted what Joseph Ander had wrongly corrupted. Now he had to get back to Kaylin if she was still alive. He made himself banish that thought. She had to be alive. With a gasp, Zed opened his eyes. It was dark. He groped and found walls of rock. He stumbled forward, toward light, toward sound. He realized he was back in his body. He was no longer in the Raven. He didn't understand how that could be. It was real, though. He looked at his hands, not feathers, hands. He had his soul back. He fell to his knees, weeping with relief. To lose his soul was beyond what he expected, and he had expected the worst. Without his soul, he had been able to inhabit the Raven. He brightened a bit. That was an experience he had never had. No wizard had ever succeeded in projecting himself into an animal, and to think it had only required surrendering his soul. He decided that once was enough. He walked on toward the light, toward the roar of water. He remembered where he was. Reaching the edge, he dove into the lake and swam to the far shore. Zed dragged himself out on the far bank. Without thinking, he swept a hand down his robes to dry himself. And then he realized his power was back. His strength, his gift, was back. At a sound, he looked up. Spider nuzzled him. Grinning, Zed rubbed the friendly, soft nose.
Spider, girl! Good to see you, my friend! Good to see you!
Spider snorted her pleasure, too. Zed found the saddle and the rest of the tack where he had left it. Just for the delight of it, he floated the blanket and saddle onto Spider's back. Spider thought it interesting. Spider was a good sport and a good horse. Zed turned at a sound from above. Something was coming down the mountain. Water. The lake, for some reason, had given way. It was all coming down. Zed sprang up onto Spider.
Time to get out of here, girl!
Spider obliged him. Dalton had just come back into his office when he heard someone come in behind him. It was Stein. When the man turned to close the door, Dalton glanced to the bottom of Stein's cape and saw the scalp he had added. Dalton went to the side table and poured himself a glass of water. He was feeling warm and a little dizzy. Well, that was to be expected. What do you want, Stein?
Just a social visit.
Ah, Dalton said. He took a drink.
Nice new office you got yourself.
It was nice. Everything was the best. The only thing from his old office was the silver scroll stand beside the desk. He liked the sword stand and brought it along. As if reminded, he fingered the hilt of his sword in the stand.
Well, Stein added, you've earned it. No doubt about that. You've done good for yourself, though. Good for yourself and your wife.
Dalton gestured.
New sword, Stein. A little too fancy for your taste, I would think.
The man seemed pleased that Dalton had noticed the weapon.
This here,
he said, lifting it with a thumb by the downswept crossguard a few inches out of its scabbard,
is the sword of truth, the real sword carried by the Seeker.
Dalton found it unsettling that a man like Stein would have it. And what are you doing with it?
One of my men brought it to me. Quite a lot of trouble, too.
Really? Dalton asked, feigning interest.
They captured a Mordsith in the process of bringing it to me. The real sword of truth and a real Mordsith. Imagine that.
Quite the achievement. The Emperor will be pleased.
He will be when I present him with the sword. He is pleased with the news you sent, too. To have defeated Lord Rawl so resoundingly is an achievement. It won't be long until our forces are here and we catch him. And the Mother Confessor. Have you found her yet?
No. Dalton took another drink of water. But with the spell Sister Pentheia contributed, I don't see how she has a chance. From the look of the knuckles of my men, they did their job. He paused, looked down. Up until they got caught and killed, anyway. No, this is one encounter the Mother Confessor is not going to live through. If she is still alive, I will hear about it soon enough. If she is dead, he shrugged, then we may never find her body. Dalton leaned against his desk.
When will Jigang be here? Not long. Week, maybe. The advance guard, maybe sooner. He is looking forward to setting up residence in your fine city.
Dalton scratched his forehead. He had things to do. not that any of it really mattered.
Well, I'll be around if you need me, Stein said.
He turned back from the door.
Oh, and Dalton. Bertrand told me that you were more than understanding about your wife and him.
Dalton shrugged. Why not? She is just a woman. I can snap my fingers and have a dozen. Hardly anything to get possessive about. Stein seemed genuinely pleased.
I'm glad to see you've come around. The order will suit you. We don't hold to notions of possessive attitudes toward women.
Dalton was trying to think of places the mother confessor could have gone to ground.
Well, I'll love the order, then. I don't hold with those notions myself.
Stein scratched his stubble.
I'm happy to know you feel that way, Dalton. Since you do, I'd like to compliment you on your choice of a whore for a wife.
Dalton, turning to look over papers, stiffened. I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, Bertrand, he loans her to me now and then. He was bragging on her and wanted me to have some myself. He told her the Creator wanted her to please me. I just wanted to tell you, she's quite the hot one.
Stein turned toward the door.
There's one more thing, Dalton said. What's that?
He asked, turning back. Dalton brought the tip of his sword whistling around and sliced Stein's belly open, just below his weapons belt. He made the cut shallow, so as not to slice through everything, just deep enough so that his bowels would spill out at his feet in front of him. Stein gasped in shock, his jaw dropping, his eyes showing the whites all around as he stared down. He looked up at Dalton as he was falling to his knees. The gasp turned to panting grunts.
You know, Dalton said, as it turns out, I really am the possessive type. Thank the good spirits, your end was quick.
Stein collapsed on his side. Dalton stepped over him, around behind him. But just because it's quick, I don't want you to feel you're missing out on anything, or that I'm neglecting what you have coming. Dalton grabbed Stein's greasy hair in a fist. He sliced his sword around the top of Stein's forehead, put a boot to the man's back, and ripped his scalp off. He came around and showed it to the shrieking man.
That was for Franca, by the way, just so you know.
As Stein lay on the floor, his viscera spilled out, his head bleeding profusely, Dalton casually walked to the door and opened it, pleased the new man hadn't opened the door without permission, despite all the screaming.
Phil, you and Gregory get in here.
Yes, Minister Campbell?
Phil, Stein here is making a mess in my office. Please help him out.
Yes, Minister Campbell.
And I don't want him ruining the carpets.
Dalton, as he picked up some papers from his desk, glanced down at the screaming man.
Take him over there and throw him out the window.
Chapter 70 Richard crashed through the front door. He saw people there, but he headed straight for Kaylin. Gian seized his arm.
Richard, wait!
What? What is it? How is she?
She is still alive. She has made it past a critical time.
Richard nearly collapsed with relief. He felt tears course down his face, but he kept himself together. He was so tired he had trouble doing the simplest things. He hadn't been able to turn the knob to open the door, and he had not been able to stop, either.
I can heal her now. My power is back.
Richard turned to the hall. Gian seized his arm again.
I know. Du Shailu has her power back, too. You must see her first.
I'll see her later. I have to heal Kaylin before anything else.
No!
Gian shouted in Richard's face. It surprised him so that he halted.
Why? What's wrong?
Du Shailu said she knows now why she came to you. Du Shailu said we must not let you touch Kaylin until you see her first.
She made me swear I would draw my sword on you before I let you near Kaylin.
Please, Kaharin, do not make me do that, I beg you.
Richard took a breath and tried to calm himself.
All right. If it's that important, then where is Du Shailu?
Gian led Richard into the hall and to a door next to the room where Kaylin was. Richard took a long look at the door to Kaylin, but then followed Gian's urging and went in the other door. Du Shailu was sitting in a chair holding a baby. She beamed up at Richard. He knelt before her and looked at the sleeping bundle in her arms.
Du Shailu, he said in a whisper. It's beautiful.
You have a daughter, husband.
With all the things in Richard's head, arguing with Du Shailu about the child's parentage was the last of them.
I have named her Kara, in honor of the one who saved our life.
Richard nodded. Kara will be pleased, I'm sure. Du Shailu put a hand on his shoulder.
Richard,
Are you all right? You look like you have been to the land of the dead. He smiled a little. In a way, I have. Gian said your gift is back. She nodded. Yes, and you must believe in it. My gift is to feel a spell and silence it. Do Shailu, I need to heal Kalin. No, you must not. Richard raked his fingers back through his hair. To Shailu, I know you want her help, but that is crazy. She gripped his shirt in her fist. Listen to me, Richard. I came to you for a reason. This is the reason I know now. I came to save you the pain of losing Kalin. She has magic in her that is a trap. If you touch her with your magic to heal her, it will spring the magic and kill her. It was a way of making sure they killed her. Richard, trying to remain calm, licked his lips. But you have the power to annul spells. When we first met, Sister Verna told me so. Du Shailu, you can annul this spell, and then I can heal her. Du Shailu held his gaze in the grip of hers. No, listen to me. You are not listening to what is. You are hearing only what you wish to be. Listen to what is. The spell is the kind of magic I cannot touch with mine. I cannot make it fade away like other magic. It is in her, like a barb on a fish hook. Your magic that heals will trigger it, and you will kill her. Do you hear me, Richard? If you touch her with your magic, you will kill her. Richard pressed a hand to his forehead. Then what are we to do? She is still alive. If she lived this long, she has a good chance. You must care for her. She must recover without magic. Once she is better, the spell will fade away, just like a hook in a fish dissolves. Before she is well, it will be gone. But she will be well enough by then so that your magic will not be needed. Richard nodded. All right. Thank you, Du Shailu. I mean that. Thank you for everything. She hugged him, even with the baby between them. But we have to get out of here. The Order is going to be here any time. We have to get out of Andereth. The man, Edwin, he is a good man. He has fixed a wagon for you to take Kalin away. How is she? Is she awake? In and out. We feed her a little, let her drink, give her what herbs and cures we can. Richard, she is very badly hurt, but she is alive. I think she will be well again, though. I really believe that. Du Shailu got up, taking her new baby with her, and led Richard to the next room. Richard was exhausted, but his heart was hammering so hard he felt wide awake again. He felt so helpless, though, that he let Du Shailu lead him. The curtains were drawn, and the room was dimly lit. Kalin was lying on her back, covered most of the way with blankets. Richard looked down at the face he knew so well but didn't recognize. The sight took his breath. He had to struggle to stay on his feet. He struggled, too, to hold back his tears. She was unconscious. He gently took her limp hand in his, but there was no response. Du Shailu went around to the other side of the bed. Richard gestured. Du Shailu understood and smiled at the idea. She gently laid little baby Kara in the crook of Kalin's arm. The baby, still asleep, nuzzled in Kalin's arm. Kalin stirred. Her hand partly curled around the baby, and a small smile came to her lips. The smile was the first thing Richard recognized as Kalin. Outside, once they gently got Kalin situated in the special carriage Edwin had converted, they brought it out of the carriage house into the early morning light. A man named Linscott, once a director and still a friend of Edwin's, had helped make the cover for the carriage and alter the suspension so it would ride more gently. Linscott and Edwin were part of a group that had been resisting the corrupt rule in Andereth. Unsuccessfully, it turned out. Now, at Richard's urging, they were going to leave. There weren't many, but some people were going to escape. At the side of the house in the shade of a cherry tree, Dalton Campbell was waiting for them. Richard instantly tensed, prepared for a battle. Dalton Campbell, though, didn't look to have any fight in him. Lord Rawl, I came to see off you and the Mother Confessor. Richard glanced over at the baffled faces of some of the others. They seemed as surprised as Richard. And how did you know we were here? The man smiled. It's what I do, Lord Rawl. It's my job to know things. At least it was. Linscott was looking like he was about to go for the man's throat. Edwin, too, looked ready for blood. Dalton didn't seem to care. Richard signaled with a tilt of his head,
and Jian and Du Shailu ushered everyone else back. With the rest of the Blade Masters nearby, none of them seemed too concerned about this one man.
May I say, Lord Rawl, that in another time, another place, I think we could have been friends.
I don't, Richard said.
The man shrugged.
Maybe not.
He pulled a folded blanket from under his arm.
I brought this in case you need another to keep your wife warm.
Richard was confused by the man and by what he wanted. Dalton placed the blanket off to the side in the carriage. Richard figured that Dalton could have caused a lot of trouble if he intended it, so that wasn't what he was about.
I just wanted to wish you good luck. I hope the Mother Confessor will be well soon. The Midlands needs her. She is a fine woman. I'm sorry I tried to have her killed.
What did you say?
He looked up into Richard's eyes.
I'm the one who sent those men. If you get your magic back, Lord Rawl, please don't try to heal her with it. A sister of the dark provided a spell to kill her with the dark side of the magic if healing is tried on what was done to her. You must let her get better on her own.
Richard thought he should be killing the man, but for some reason he was just standing there, staring at him as he confessed.
If you wish to kill me, please feel free. I really don't care.
What do you mean?
You have a wife who loves you. Cherish her.
And your wife?
Dalton shrugged.
Ah, well, I'm afraid she isn't going to make it.
Richard frowned.
What are you talking about?
There is a nasty illness going around among the prostitutes in Fairfield. Somehow, my wife, Sovereign, his wife, and I have acquired it. We are already coming ill. Very unfortunate. It's an unpleasant death, I'm told. The poor Sovereign is weeping and inconsolable. Considering it was the one thing he feared above all else, one would think he would have been more careful in choosing his partners. The Dominie Dirch, too, I've heard, have crumbled to dust. All our work seems to be coming undone. I expect that Emperor Jigang, when he arrives, is going to be quite displeased.
We can hope, Richard said.
Dalton smiled.
Well, I've things to do unless, of course, you wish to kill me.
Richard smiled at the man.
A wise woman told me that the people are the willing accomplices of tyranny. They make those like you possible. I'm going to do the worst possible thing I could do to you and your people. What my grandfather would have done to you. I'm going to leave you all to suffer the consequences of your own actions.
Anne was so cramped, she feared she would be crippled for life, never to walk again. The box she was in was bouncing around in the wagon something awful as it rattled over cobblestones, adding to her misery. She felt as if someone had beaten her with a club. If she wasn't let out soon, she was sure she would go mad. As if in answer to the prayer, the wagon finally slowed and then stopped. Anne sagged with blessed relief. She was near tears from the pain of hitting the sides and bottom, being unable to use her hands and feet to brace herself. She heard the hasp being worked, and then the top opened, letting cool night air in. Anne took a thankful lungful, savoring it like a sweet perfume. The front of the box dropped onto the bed of the wagon. Sister Alessandra was standing there, looking in. Anne peered around but didn't see anyone else. They were in a narrow side street that looked deserted, for the most part. One old woman walked past but didn't even glance their way. Anne frowned.
Alessandra, what's going on?
Sister Alessandra folded her hands in a prayerful pose.
Prelate, please, I want to return to the light.
Anne blinked.
Where are we?
The city the Emperor has been traveling to. It's called Fairfield. I encouraged your driver to let me drive the wagon.
Encouraged him? How?
With a club. Anne's eyebrows rose.
I see.
And then, I'm so bad with directions, we became separated from the rest of the line and, well, I guess now we're lost.
How unfortunate for us.
I guess that leaves looking for some of Jigang's troops and surrendering, or else returning to the light.
Alessandra, are you serious?
The woman looked ready to burst into tears. The banter was over.
Please, prelate, help me.
Alessandra, you don't need me. The path to the light is through your own heart. Sister Alessandra knelt down behind the wagon
as Anne still sat in her box, her hands and feet in chains.
Please, dear Creator,
Alessandra began. Anne listened as the woman poured her heart out. At the end, she kissed her ring finger. Anne held her breath, waiting for a bolt of lightning to strike Alessandra dead for betraying the keeper of the underworld. Nothing happened. Alessandra smiled up at Anne.
Helot, I can feel it. I can...
Her words were cut off with a choking sound. Her eyes bulged. Anne scooted toward her.
Alessandra, is it your gang? Is it your gang in your mind?
Alessandra nodded as best she could.
Swear loyalty to Richard. Swear it in your heart. It's the only thing to keep the dreamwalker from your mind.
Falling to the ground, Sister Alessandra twitched in convulsions of pain, at the same time mumbling words Anne couldn't understand. At last, the woman went slack, panting in relief. She sat up and peered up into the wagon.
It worked. Prelate, it worked.
She put her hands to her head.
Chigang is gone from my mind. Oh, praise the Creator. Praise the Creator.
How about getting these things off me and doing your praying later?
Sister Alessandra scurried to help. Before long, Anne had her shackles off, and she had been healed. For the first time in what seemed ages, she could again touch her own gift. The two of them unhitched the horses and saddled them with tack from the wagon. Anne hadn't felt so joyous in years. They both wanted to get far away from the Imperial Order army. As they made their way through the city heading north, they came across a square filling with thousands of people all carrying candles. Anne bent over on her horse to ask one of the young women what was going on.
It's a candlelight vigil for peace, the woman said.
Anne was dumbfounded.
A what?
A candlelight vigil for peace. We are all gathering to show the soldiers coming into the city a better way, to show them the people are going to insist on peace.
Anne scowled.
If I were you, I'd be heading for a hole because these men don't believe in peace.
The woman smiled in a long-suffering manner.
When they see us all gathered for peace, they will see that we are a force too powerful to overcome with anger and hatred.
As the young woman marched on into the square, Anne seized Sister Alessandra's sleeve.
Let's get out of here. This is going to be a killing field.
But, Prelate, these people are in danger. You know what the soldiers of the Order will do.
The women.
You know what they will do to the women, and any men who resist will be slaughtered.
Anne nodded.
I expect so. But there is nothing we can do about it. They will have peace. The dead will have peace. The living will have peace, too, as slaves.
They made it past the square just in time. When the soldiers arrived, it was worse even than Anne had envisioned. Screams of panic, then terror, and then pain rose from the trapped throng. The cries of the men and the children would end relatively quickly. The screams of the older girls and women had only just begun. When at last they reached the countryside, Anne asked,
I told you we had to eliminate the Sisters of the Light who wouldn't escape. Did you do as you knew I wished before you escaped with me, sister?
Sister Alessandra stared ahead as she rode.
No, prelate. Alessandra, you knew it had to be done. I want to come back to the Creator's light. I couldn't destroy the life he created. And by not killing those few, many more could die. A sister of the dark would want that. How can I trust you are telling me the truth?
Because I didn't kill the sisters. If I were still a sister of the dark, I would have. I'm telling the truth.
It would be wonderful if Alessandra had returned to the light. That had never happened before. Alessandra could be an invaluable source of information.
Or it shows you are lying and are still sworn to the Keeper.
Prelate, I helped you escape. Why won't you believe me?
Anne looked over at the woman as they rode out toward the wilds, toward the unknown.
I can never fully believe or trust you, Alessandra. Not after the lies you have told. That is the curse of lying, sister. Once you place that crown of the liar upon your head, you can take it off again, but it leaves a stain for all time.
Richard turned when he heard the horse approaching from behind. He checked Kaelin, who lay inside the carriage as he walked beside it. She was asleep or possibly unconscious. At least he could now recognize a little of her face. Richard looked again when the horse was closer and saw a rider in red. Kara trotted her horse up close and then dismounted. She took the reins and walked up beside him. She had a limp.
Lord Rawl, it took me a long time to catch you. Where are you going?
Home.
Home?
That's right, home. Kara looked up the road.
Where is home?
Heartland. Maybe to the west, in the mountains. There are some nice places there. Places I've always wanted to take Kaelin. She seemed to accept this and walked silently beside him for a time, leading her horse along behind.
Lord Rawl, what about everything else? Dahara, the Midlands, all the people.
What about them?
Well, they will be waiting for you.
They don't need me. I quit.
Lord Rawl, how can you say such a thing?
I have violated every wizard's rule I know. I've... He let it go. He didn't care.
Where is Du Shailu?
Kara asked. I sent her home to her people. Her task with us was done. Richard glanced over. She had her baby, a beautiful little girl. She named it Kara, after you. Kara beamed.
Then I am glad it was not ugly. Some babies are ugly, you know.
Well, this one was beautiful.
Did it look like you, Lord Rawl?
Richard scowled at her.
No.
Kara peered into the carriage. Her blonde braid slipped forward over her shoulder.
What happened to the mother confessor?
I just about got her killed. Kara didn't say anything. I heard you were captured. Are you all right? He asked. Kara pushed her braid back over her shoulder.
They were fools. They didn't take my Aegil. When you fixed the magic, I made them all curse their mothers for ever meeting their fathers.
Richard smiled. That was the Kara he knew.
And then I killed them, she added.
She held out the broken top of a black bottle. It still had the gold filigree stopper.
Lord Rawl, I failed. I didn't bring you your sword, but I managed to break the black bottle from the wizard's keep with a sword, at least.
She stopped, her blue eyes brimming with tears.
Lord Rawl, I'm sorry. I failed. I tried my best, I swear, but I failed.
Richard stopped then. He put his arms around her. No, you didn't fail, Kara. Because you broke that bottle with the sword, we were able to get magic back to right.
Really?
He nodded as he looked her in the eye. Really? You did right, Kara. I'm proud of you. They started walking again.
So, Lord Rawl, how far to home?
He thought it over a few minutes. I guess Kaelin is my family, so that makes it home wherever we are. As long as I'm with Kaelin, I'm home. Kara, it's over. You can go home now. I release you. She stopped. Richard walked on.
But I don't have a family. They are all dead.
He looked back at her, standing in the road, looking as forlorn as anything he had ever seen. Richard went back, put an arm around her shoulders, and started walking with her.
We're your family, Kara, Kaelin and me. We love you.
So I guess you should come home with us. That seemed to suit her.
Will there be people at this home place who need killing?
Richard smiled. I don't think so.
Then why would we want to go there?
When he only smiled, she said,
I thought you wanted to take over the world. I was looking forward to you being a tyrant. I say you should do it. The mother confessor would agree with me. That makes it two against one. We win.
The world didn't want me. They took a vote and said no.
A vote? There was your problem.
I won't do it again. Kara limped along beside him for a time and then said,
They will all find you, you know. The Daharans are bonded to you. You are the Lord Rawl. Everyone will find you.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Richard,
came a soft voice. He pulled the team up and went to the side of the carriage. Kaelin was awake. He took her hand.
Who's that?
She asked. Kara leaned in.
Just me. I had to come back. You see what kind of trouble you get into when I'm not watching over you?
Kaelin smiled a little smile. She released Richard's hand and took Kara's.
Glad you're home,
Kaelin whispered.
Lord Rawl said I saved the magic. Can you imagine? What was I thinking? I had the chance to rid myself of magic and instead I saved it.
Kaelin smiled again.
How are you feeling?
Richard asked.
Terrible. You don't look so bad,
Kara told her.
I've been much worse.
Richard gently stroked Kaelin's hand. You'll get better, I promise. and wizards always keep their promises.
Cold, she said.
Her teeth were beginning to chatter. Richard spotted the blanket Dalton Campbell had put on the side and pulled it closer. The Sword of Truth fell out. He stood staring at it.
The sword has come home too, I guess,
Kara said.
I guess it has.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of Soul of the Fire by Terry Goodkind. Copyright 1999 by Terry Goodkind and performance copyright 1999 by Brilliance Corporation, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Corporation, Post Office Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.